The boys are freaking back in town. The boys are back in town. Although I'm in Napa, California, so I'm not even really in town. But
You're in A-town.
I'm in A-town. Shout out to Lance and Joanna and the tens of millions of other listeners just in Napa, California. I know we have tens of millions just in this one area. So shout out to all of those listeners. Dude, I think I may have forgotten how to do this. It's been so long.
Wow. Yeah. It is crazy. I think that this is the longest that we've gone without recording a podcast since we started this thing?
I think so. And since you brought that up, it's the longest we've gone without recording a podcast in probably 5 years, Robbie, because today, as we are recording this, it is officially the 5-year anniversary of Friends from Work.
Wow.
Congratulations. You made it 5 years, dude.
I'm going to do a thumbs up and see if I get... Oh wow. I didn't even get my balloons.
Yeah. Don't you have to do like the double peace sign or whatever, or hands up?
Oh, is that it? Is that the...
Something like that.
No, still not there. It's like of all I want it now. It always happens when I don't want it. And now I'm asking for it. And ain't that just the way?
We're not going to do an entire trip down memory lane here, but 5 years is wild. 5 years ago, standing in that parking lot, in Iowa, chatting with you about this idea. There was an idea, and it became something. And it's been so much fun. So not only 5 years, Robbie, it's been 5 weeks since we've talked last. So why don't you catch us up, me included, myself included, because you and I haven't even really chatted in 5 weeks, which has felt really weird. Catch me up on your life.
Man, it has been a crazy 5 weeks, per usual, I guess. Went and tried another case, which was fun. Wound up randomly meeting the makeup artist for Avengers Infinity War.
What?
In context of a case I was working on. So that was fun. It's always crazy when worlds collide in that way. But
that's insane.
Yeah. Candace and I are kind of in already, which is weird to say, but we're in planning mode for this big trip we have in November, and that's kind of been dominating the non-work time.
Where are you going?
I can't remember if you and I talked about this.
I don't know.
I am going to New Zealand.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. I didn't realize it was November, but that's unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah. It's Candace and I's 10-year anniversary.
Surely you're doing obviously Lord of the Rings stuff, right?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Okay. I've got a guidebook and everything. Candace is so good at planning that stuff and she's been all over it. We're doing like kind of splitting it between the different, like the north and the south, but then also kind of changing up the ways that we're planning to see things. Like we're doing certain things in hotels and some like Airbnbs, but one portion we're doing like a Sprinter van, kind of camper van thing.
That's incredible.
So
throwback to my touring days.
Man, I know. It's I remember though, whenever we were touring in those, thinking, you know, if you could,
oh yeah,
you could put a little kitchenette in here.
Oh yeah,
you could be set.
Oh yeah, it low key was kind of dope. So I think you'll enjoy it.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
So that's I'm very excited
I'm
about
sure
that.
I'm sure there's like a website that's marked off specific sites and stuff. I would imagine that you can follow.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one. There's like there. I found this book that's like a print book that I like couldn't find a digital version of, which is fine because I'm always looking for an excuse to buy books anyway. But it's this Kiwi guy that is just been, I think he's become friends with Peter Jackson, but I don't know. He's really into the Lord of the Rings and Hobbit movies as like in so far as they are representing New Zealand. And so he has like meticulously plotted out where you can see all of these different shots and like you
Incredible.
Can go where like Minas Tirith is supposed to be. And like you can do the hike up to Mount Doom.
Yep.
Which I only we're trying know to decide if we like have that in us.
Right. I only know of that in context of Lost, because someone has done the same thing for all the Hawaii locations.
Oh, yeah.
So I knew it had to have been a thing. Yeah, I mean, you could try to reenact it, Frodo and Samwise, like carrying Candace up, or maybe she'll carry you up.
She has to carry me. That's the gig. We because my birthday falls on the trip also, so I get to be Frodo. Also, Candace is it makes sense because Candace is a kind of a Frodo blasphemer in the household.
Okay. Does she get to go along this, then?
She'll be there, but I mean, she'll be there. That's why she has to carry me.
Remember when we met Frodo on an airplane? Are you kidding me? Do you remember this now?
That's right.
I forgot about it until right now. Unbelievable. You talked to him.
Man. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, because Elijah Wood used to live in Austin. I think he still visits all the time, and of the stuff that he works on is based here.
It was our Austin to Burbank, California flight, which makes so much sense.
Yeah, that's right, man.
And then
which was just like the first thing that happened on that weekend.
Right. It's like that weekend was so magical. That was the Thor Love and Thunder premiere. That's one of those rare airports where you deplane by walking on the runway, and so we actually walked after him and said something. Whereas normally you wouldn't get a chance to do that. He probably would have been gone. Yeah. Well, anyways, that's amazing. So
yeah.
That'll be really fun. Good for you.
So yeah, it's been fun kind of planning that. And then in between work, I have gotten a chance to catch up on some comics that have been piling up, and I'm excited to talk about some of those over the coming weeks. But what's been going on with you? What's the word?
Yeah, I have had by far the busiest year of my life in my studio. So I was just rapidly working toward deadlines with making music stuff, which is awesome, incredibly fulfilling. But I had this massive project that was due on September 2. And so I was kind of working toward finishing that. I had a golf tournament in Denver. Shout out to our Denver listeners at Castle Pines. And then,
I'm so jealous of our Denver listeners.
Yeah, it was beautiful. Turned that in and then went on an awesome vacation, went back to Michigan, did the beach thing, played a bunch of golf. And now I'm in Napa, California for another golf work thing, not a pleasure thing. And then I'm really excited about is as far as talking about the upcoming fall, when I get back, I'm redoing my studio for the first time ever. Like in 10 years, I've kind of had things laid out the exact same way. I'm totally pulling everything out and then flipping it. So people who watch this podcast are going to start seeing some different visuals during the Agatha episode. So that'll be really fun. And then Annika and I are going to Disney World with Violet in November.
Oh, man. That's fun.
So much fun. Annika and I have both gotten the chance to do Disney World a ton of times. As adults, like via music connections, but also via Kirk. He's hooked us up before, and the Pro Bowl's down there. And so we've done it, and it's been so much fun as adults. But this will be my first time bringing my basically 4-year-old. And so just to see it through her eyes, the thought of that gets me so excited. Like she's still – like she's gotten her dresses. She has 3 Elsa dresses she's ready to take. She thinks the princesses actually live there. Like we're going to fly down there and visit them. So I think it's going to be, it's going to be totally different than doing it as adults, obviously, but really looking forward to that too. So there's potential that this fall absolutely slaps. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. I love that you're taking her at this age specifically. I was telling you this, I think last time you were down here, but I have such fond memories of a Disney World trip where I was the exact same age. Like it's such a perfect, like it's like you understand enough to feel like you're immersed in this world, but you don't, like I think that I legitimately believed I was meeting Goofy.
Yeah, I think you're just getting to the age. Like I would say 4 to 6 are probably your earliest memories for most people, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like pre-kindergarten. So yeah, like hopefully it's so magical. Like you're old enough to just barely remember that you went to this magical place, but not old enough to realize that it's not real, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's the sweet spot.
Yeah. So
that's going to be fun. We're both going to have magical Novembers.
Yeah. Yeah. Ironically, it's kind of like just after Agatha's done. So the next little break we take will be fun things for both you and I. Okay. Yeah. So speaking of that, we've been off for 5 weeks. There hasn't been a lot of Marvel news in the 5 weeks. So that kind of worked out perfectly well. So I was going to say Deadpool and Wolverine slapped. Everyone knows that. The movie was awesome, but it also just crushed box office. Like our predictions of it being the highest grossing R-rated movie were correct. It's actually done even, I think, more than we thought. Like more than just highest grossing R-rated film. I think it was racing towards $1.5 billion, which you're getting in the territory of like, you know, top 25 highest grossing movies ever. I mean, you're approaching the No Way Home range. It's not going to get there. But just so our listeners kind of understand the different perspective there.
Which is crazy because it's like No Way Home is a movie that pretty much any age of a person can see. Like there's nothing in that movie that would prevent parents from taking kids
that
are old enough to
want to see it. There's not 120 F-words.
Right. And Deadpool, like, so it is, I mean, it's like what you were saying, it says a lot when that many people are going to see an R-rated movie because there are obstacles to see a movie like that that don't exist to go see a PG-13 film.
Absolutely.
That said, speaking of Spider-Man.
Yeah. You go ahead and say it.
That was the one big news item. So I'm actually, okay, I'm really excited to talk to you about this for a second because I haven't really gotten to fully process it yet, and I don't know how you feel. This past week, a couple days ago, after months of speculation, Sony announced Sony/Marvel announced the director for Spider-Man 4, the new Tom Holland Spider-Man film, continuing the story post No Way Home. And it will be the MCU's own Destin Daniel Cretton, who people will know as the director of Shang-Chi and the creator and executive producer, I believe, of the upcoming Wonder Man Disney Plus series.
Yeah.
So
congrats to him.
Shang-Chi to Spider-Man. That's the pipeline here. Not something that anybody would have thought I would be saying 10 years ago.
I am curious what your thoughts are on it. I'll say this. In the past, we've tried to a little bit shy away from crazy hot take reactions to things like castings and directors. You know what I mean? Because
Right.
Like, we don't want it to get so, like, sports fandom-y where, like, instantly you love something or hate it just because of who's doing it. So, in general, we're not the podcast that does a ton of that. That's the first thing. The second thing is, I kind of would like to continue that trend going forward. Like, I'm going to react to the movies, and I'm going to give hot takes on that stuff. But all the behind-the-scenes stuff is not totally my scene. Obviously,
agreed.
Right. There's some stuff that is right. Like if Nolan was announced, we'd be talking about it and freaking out. Okay. So those are my two disclaimers. It's not totally my scene to track all of the different casting rumors and all of that. By the way, like, did you see last week that like all the major outlets, the Direct, Hollywood Reporter, all these outlets reported that the third installment of the Into the Spider-Verse trilogy is being totally scrapped and it's not going to come out till 2027. Did you see that? They all reported that.
No. Is that a thing?
Well, it's like literally they didn't say it was a rumor. They reported it. And then the director and Daniel Pemberton both tweeted like, no, we're still tracking along. Like we're not scrapping everything. So it's just like, that's the kind of stuff I'm like, people wasted so much energy talking about that and it wasn't even true. So let's just calm down.
That's why I'm glad that I missed that entire thing because that would have been a real roller coaster for me. It was like in 2019 when we thought that Far From Home would be the last MCU Spider-Man film, which can you imagine?
Right. No, I can't, and that's not going to happen. So on the positive side for me, I like that it's kind of homegrown talent, if you will. Like, I like that there's a rapport there already. I like Kevin Feige believing in the people that have been there and leaning into that. I think that's cool. Mm-hmm. In general, that's how I would build my teams as well. So and I'm really excited for him. I think he showed, like, especially in the first half of Shang-Chi, that he can have a grasp of some of the grounded elements that I think will work well in a Spider-Man film. And he clearly knows how to, like, tell a story. That being said, I don't think it would have been my first choice, to be honest. Like, you know, I'm not the biggest Shang-Chi person, and I know some of our listeners are. I think in general, I would rank Shang-Chi lower than a lot of our community, which that's another thing we're trying to work on. Building up that Friends from Work community score so I can kind of compare that. But I think that's my gauge. I don't know. I don't know if that's your gauge. Like, in, I haven't ever really liked Shang-Chi as much as some people. So I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if that, like, if maybe I think I maybe wished somebody else had done that and he had been focusing on Shang-Chi too. Does this mean there's not going to be a Shang-Chi? Look, does this mean there's not going to be a Shang-Chi 2? That's hard to say. From him, I don't know if that's the case.
Yeah.
He's already doing another series too, so he'll be busy for the next 5 years. But yeah, so I'm excited. Probably not my first pick, but I'm excited. How about you?
So I think I'm in a similar spot. I think I was initially... Maybe I don't know if disappointed is the right word. Yeah, again, I'm in the same spot as you are now because I feel like that's too negative. I think that this is the problem with these situations where you have something like just an announcement like that so hyped that it's like it kind of at some point it has to be a name that is either so shocking or like so on point and exactly what people are craving, or it's just sort of like, oh, okay. And
yeah, right. Good point.
So it's like, we'd thrown out all these names that have been rumored. Like at one point I was really gunning for the Russos to do it.
Or Sam Raimi. I remember you were even open to that idea.
And that's something that had been discussed. And like, you know, it's funny, Greg and I, have been doing some, you know, every now and then, trying to do some kind of conversations in text over on the weekly newsletter we have that is currently on Substack, which you can go check out for free. We'll talk about that a little bit more later. But we had one going for a while where we were going to kind of get our thoughts out on the potential Spider-Man director and who we thought it could be and thoughts on maybe who it should be. And I had written up, like, I think the week before the Avengers announcement, had written up this whole thing on why it needed to be the Russos.
It
was like, you know, and so then we were trying to get something else out, and Greg, of course, was very on top of it and had a lot of really thoughtful comments. And I am just now giving my thoughts here. And so I think this is not a name that I like. I'm kind of with you on Shang-Chi. Like, I think I see some cons and I also see some pros, and I think I'll start with the bad so that I can end on a high note. Like, I still think Homecoming is a uniquely, like, cohesive Spider-Man film. Like, not in a totally different way than what you got with, like, Spider-Man 2. But it's like those two, I think, if you're looking for just like capturing a certain tone, and I'm kind of pulling No Way Home out because it's such its own thing. But like, I look at that and it's like, man, you like the quality control is totally here. Like the understanding of the character, like the grounding it in a very specific kind of high school-y feeling way. Mm-hmm. And I'm just not sure that I see the... like immediately, at least, like the vision that would be there for a Daniel Cretton Spider-Man film. Like, but I think it's maybe just because I haven't seen that large of a body of his work. I need to go back and watch more things now as we're getting ready for that. But it's like, I think I'm not sure that there's anything that, like, sometimes you see a movie or a show and you think, like, oh man, I would actually love to see that person take on this kind of movie, which is like, right, where I was coming from with the Russos. Like,
right, because they've Civil done War.
When they've done the big stuff, like, I would actually really like to see them kind of go back to a Winter Soldier scale and do it with a character like this that they love and understand. And I just have never had thoughts like that when it comes to Dustin Daniel Cretton. But I also, I'm not like, there's enough about Shang-Chi that I think works really well that I can also get pretty excited about it. Like, I think the pros for me are like the action sequences in Shang-Chi, specifically like what you're calling out, the first half, I think could translate really well in a Spider-Man film. Like, if he were to work with the same team, and obviously the choreography would be different stylistically, but like, I love the idea of a Spider-Man movie that gets kind of more in your face in those ways. That's a little bit like, has fun with the, like, the hand-to-hand stuff that we don't always see, especially in these like larger scale Spider-Man films. So that makes me excited.
Which this one seems to be setting up to be, right? Because the last time we saw Peter, he was the tech-less Peter. So
yes,
that's
yeah,
what I'm hoping
no, exactly.
they're leaning into.
Like, sure. I want to see, like, yeah, I want to see Spider-Man like breaking up like a bank robbery and like taking down bad guys in alleyways. Like, that's the stuff that...
Just protecting New York on a small scale, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that he has the vision for that. And like you said, especially like not just the bus scene, also like the Macau stuff, I think is like, I see a lot, even like the side of the building, you know, whenever like they're kind of having that fight before they go to the Ten Rings compound. Like, that's a scene that I could see translating to a Spider-Man film. But the other piece of it that I think makes me optimistic is like the humor in Shang-Chi, when it works, works pretty well. Like, it, I think, you know, part of my hesitance there is just that it's, I wouldn't say like totally consistent for me. Like, there are moments that don't totally land. But I think what's important is they also don't flop. Like, there aren't really moments in that movie where I'm like, oh, yikes.
Sure.
Like, it's the floor is still fairly high. And I do think like there are movies or there are lines in Shang-Chi that we've talked about that like still make me laugh out loud. Like, that's a weird horse always makes me laugh out loud.
Yeah, it does.
And like, that's the kind of humor that I do think could translate to a Spider-Man film. So,
when
you know,
I
it's
saw
a mixed
those
bag, but I think
act.
Generally good news.
Yep, there's some good ones. I think you hit the nail on the head for sure. And you know what? I admittedly also don't know his entire background. And so maybe he is a lifelong Spider-Man fan and has always had a vision for it. Like, I'm really only judging him through the lens of Shang-Chi, which isn't fair. Like, he's probably not going to take the same kind of mystical approach to Spider-Man that he takes to Tao Lo at the end of the movie. So, you know, I think you're right to call out the specific aspects that could work, you know?
Yeah, I think, you know, it is funny though, because most of the stuff that I've seen by him is like, if it's not Shang-Chi, it's a pretty, like, I don't know, fairly heavy drama, like in terms of what I've seen that he's put out. I'm not saying that's his entire catalog, but it is like, in some ways it's almost like it's like Eternals a little bit, in that like, I feel like you have like Chloe Zhao's, like you have like Nomadland and then you have like Eternals, and then you find out it makes sense because she's, you know, like she's a huge anime fan. And so you kind of understand like where some of these like action instincts and desires are coming from, and kind of like what some of her sensibilities are informed by.
Right.
And I think, like, I would love to, you're right, I would love to figure out more of, like, where he's coming from and what his vision is for this. I will say, kind of as a final thing for me on that point, I'm sure you saw this, that the writers, or at least one writer, was also announced.
I didn't see
for
this.
For Spider-Man. Okay, so apparently, I think it's supposed to be Chris McKenna and Eric Summers writing it again, who I believe wrote on like most of the Holland films. Let me see. Actually, you
fact
know, here
checking,
we go. I'm just kidding. Yeah,
fact checking.
Yeah, Chris McKenna and Eric Summers. Yeah, I think that they wrote like
fact checking
all three, right? Not by themselves, but I think they were writers on all three Holland Spider-Mans.
Fact checking. Everybody stand by. Everybody stand by. Are you looking too? I'm looking up Eric Summers.
Yeah, I am.
He wrote on No Way Home, Homecoming, Far From Home, and Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Okay, yeah.
Which that's good for me. That last one's good for me because I think there's some funny parts in that too.
Yeah. That's okay. Yeah, no, that's right. I think.
Okay, this is a deep cut because this is not like an unbelievable movie. But he wrote on Jumanji, which I actually think is a pretty funny movie.
Yeah, as a side for sure. And Chris McKenna, you know, again. Yeah, man, I think that's also here you go. Chris McKenna is also apparently someone that contributed to the Winter Soldier script.
Wow.
With the like I think he was like a joke writer specifically for that movie. Which okay. Again, like that is also encouraging to me because
Oh, and he wrote the Lego Batman movie. That's a good sign too.
Yeah, which that movie slaps. What I like about the Winter Soldier pitch, which again, it's obviously much more like it's much more important that he wrote the Tom Holland films or wrote on them, that they wrote on them than it that, you know, these random deep cuts. But that is what I'm like really, really holding out for when it comes to the next Spider-Man movie. Like what I love that they did. Like they did what they set out to do so well, not just in making a great trilogy, but also in making a trilogy about Tom Holland growing up and getting through high school in a way that's satisfying instead of just something that happens
right.
as kind of this like perfunctory part of the movie.
But and, now does the shift happen? That's what we've always
said. Yeah. And we've talked about it forever, but also it's something where like now it has there's the potential for a new vision. Like there's potential to do here what I don't think has really been done since the Spider-Man 2 film, really, where it's like, you're not trying to deal with an origin story. You're not trying to deal with some kind of like ballooning, like epic, all kinds of subplots thing. Like you're telling a story about like an adult Spider-Man that's like out in New York. Like we have not gotten that ever other than Spider-Man 2, because Spider-Man 3 is something that's different than that entirely.
Right.
And so, yeah, I don't know. I'm really excited about that. And like,
For sure. I mean, on that front, 100%, like we've talked about that 100 times, like,
yeah.
There is potential for it to be just the coolest, not reboot, but next chapter. I mean, there's so much potential. If Daredevil made an appearance, it wouldn't have to be, I'm not saying steal from the movie, but like just an acknowledgement that he's also in New York. But yes, like I am now so craving all of that stuff. I'm craving some swinging, like legit at nighttime swinging in New York, and some bank robberies are stopped and some cars like in the video game, you know, you have to stop a car robbery or an armed robbery and the quips with that, but then it gets intense and, you know, just like there are a lot of things that they could do that we just haven't done. Growing threat from like a Norman Osborn, or a growing threat from Kingpin, you know? I don't know. Yeah,
The Kingpin setup could be so fun, and we talked about that before, but depending on what happens in Daredevil, but like, yeah, like that feels like a layup to me. Again, it's a Spider-Man villain originally, and we've never gotten anything like that. We've never gotten anything close to that. Like Spider-Man movie has been like Spider-Man and then some like other super villain that either is created in a similar way to him or is connected to him. And it's like always a super powered person. But
I'd be kind of so bummed if they did something like that. I think it'd be more fun to do one of the other ones we just mentioned than
because it's just like
Rhino. I don't want to do Rhino, for example.
Right. No, I think the early Spider-Man comics, I mean, so much of the Lee Ditko and Romita stuff was him fighting these crime lords. It was him trying to. There's something going on in the city and Spider-Man's job is to protect people. It's not always a secret villain rising up in the shadows because he was subject to some crazy test.
Or just something a little more complicated. It's not a rip on anything we've gotten so far, but I don't want to do Lizard. Right. Right? I don't want to do Rhino. In general, I think I'd stay away from some animals.
which is hard because that's a lot of them. That's a lot of them. For Doc sure. Ock.
Yeah. Doc Ock's a little bit different. That one's a little bit different.
But I do think
Martin I Lee, think if you could keep it not so fantastical, could be kind of cool.
Man, you know what?
And he could. Okay, we're way off topic of the director, but
But maybe the not. Potential I don't know.
Is endless.
If he's wanting to bring any of the flavor that he brought to Shang-Chi, is a lot you can do with a character like Mr. Negative. That's like really
the, yeah, like the Asian background and kind of the, yeah. Yeah.
And that would be an interesting bit of connective tissue there. And honestly, he's the only, I would not want a non-Asian filmmaker handling a character like that, I think, because
that's true. That's a good call out.
You know, it would be so steeped. I think Martin Lee is
so good in that first Spider-Man game, you know? So now I'm if they could do it like that, oh.
Yeah, so, and that's fun because he's got superpowers, but I feel like that's not really, especially in the comics, but I think even in the video game, it's not all about him being so uber powerful. It's more about him as kind of the head of a gang and what he's doing to the city through this plan that he has. It's not, and that's what I'm talking about wanting.
Agreed.
That could be fun.
I think they could do a Black Cat thing and keep it really grounded.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause he needs a new, we need a new love interest.
Well, TBD on that, right? We still don't know for sure that they won't try to do the Zendaya thing.
Man, I would love for them to do the Zendaya thing in another movie.
Do Ana de Armas as Black Cat.
Oh man,
that'd be unbelievable.
That would be fun.
Yeah, so
she was so.
Robbie, why don't you and I write this?
Last James Bond.
I know, and she's so fun. Yeah, but she's fun.
And she was only in it for 5 minutes. But
she also even in that 5 minutes, the way she fights has an elegance to it that feels like a Black Cat kind of. And she's got kind of this cat-like demeanor even in that movie and how she moves and fights. And that could be cool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, let's just, you know what?
Yeah.
Let's just do it. Let's just write it.
You know what? How about we, Eric Summers, I think you just got fired. You're out. Robbie and Kyle are in.
You've done good work. Okay. No one's questioning the work that you've done.
Robbie,
but it's time for some fresh blood here.
I'll close it with this. My heart is really going to legit be on the line with this next movie. This one has almost as much potential to either get me so excited or crush my hopes and dreams. Like, I don't know that I could handle Spider-Man 4 being a flop. Like, if it's bad, that's going to bum me out so much because I do, because of the video game, because of some of the history with the originals growing up, and then how much I like the Tom Holland movies and how it's a focal character for the entire franchise. I just wanted to get it right so badly. And
the Spider-Verse movies.
Yeah, the Spider-Verse movies and the video game has given me so many like ideas and inspiration of what they could do. Because like even in the video games, there's a lot of plot in those games, but you could just take one of those isolated stories, you know, and make it work.
Yeah.
I mean, even if you just took in like the guy, if you just took in like a chapter about Tombstone, right? You could pretty easily work in Daredevil with like a Tombstone thing. You know what I mean? Like there are ways to do it. It's like, but all those could be different chapters. Those could be different movies. We could do four more with different, totally different things, you know, that are all kind of a different vibe from the trilogy that Watts did.
Well,
all right, we got to talk about something else.
Man, I know. I do want to say, not Spider-Man wise, because I do have a ton more I can say on Spider-Man. And there's a lot of stuff happening in the comics these days that I would really love to see them take on in an adaptation. But when you say this next movie, my mind went first to Captain America, which is coming out this spring.
Yeah, and February, winter for Michigan
people. Yeah, winter. Yeah, true. Spring in Austin, but that's because...
correct, yeah.
it's only ever like spring and summer here. I just wanted to say, because I haven't really gotten to, you know, we haven't talked much, and I had not seen... I kind of went through a spell of not seeing a ton of movies in the theater, which is unlike me, but which is weird. It makes me sad, but I've kind of been getting caught up, and I saw Deadpool Wolverine one more time with a friend of mine who loved it, which made me happy because he's one of these folks that I feel like had kind of fallen off on Marvel stuff. And I was really hoping that it would be, an exciting thing for him. And it very much was, but whenever I was there, you know, I saw the Captain America trailer again, and then have kind of seen it again a few times since in the theaters. And I had not seen it in the theaters, even whenever you and I did our reaction, because I think it had like just come out. But there's something about that experience where the trailer itself like works so well in that environment. Like it just feels so larger than life and like visceral and electric, and like I'm actually getting really excited for that movie. But the other thing that I'm really loving is it feels like at every movie I've seen where that trailer's playing, people seem kind of excited about it. Like not in some like over the top way, but it feels like there's kind of a little buzz, you know?
Oh, I think next year is gonna be huge in general. I think that they spaced it out. You know, we got the barrage of content. Then we had a massive gap. Then they had this huge home run with Deadpool and Wolverine. And now we're going back to a massive content gap other than Agatha, which we're going to talk about in 1 second. Then when it finally kicks back in, to go from Captain America to Daredevil to Thunderbolts with those three all being grounded, that's the order. Like,
yeah.
I think that's going to get people ripping. And then right when they're thinking, okay, I've seen a lot of grounded stuff, they're going to get Fantastic Four, which is going to be a totally different thing.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be huge. Massive.
Yeah. No, I think that that's right. And I do, like, I'm
we're going to watch those three movies. We're going to think they're unbelievable. And then everyone's going to be like, man, I kind of miss some of the, like, fun cosmic side of stuff, you know? That's what's going to happen.
Which is funny. But it is, you know, it's like, I think that's the thing, is even I was so focused on Fantastic Four, which is by far my most anticipated film of probably the next few years, although I'm sure I'm missing something.
Mine
but
too.
But, you know, it's just like, as we're getting closer to that, and Thunderbolts, like, I just... I think this is the right call. I'm excited about it. And so not only am I excited about what this Spider-Man movie is that we're talking about, and you know, if you missed it 5 weeks ago or 6 weeks ago, we also talked about the announcement around Secret Wars and all that stuff. So yeah, there's plenty of speculation there, but it's just, I think what is exciting to me 5 weeks after us taking this pause is like, I'm stepping back, I'm looking at some of these announcements, I'm looking at what's coming, and it all just feels suddenly like both more tangible and more manageable in a good way. Like, I realized that after 2019, when we got that like massive announcement at Comic-Con, and it was just like, here's our plan for the next like decade. There's something about that where like getting that much information all at once is kind of, it's overwhelming, obviously, but it's also like, it's hard to figure out how to feel at certain junctures because you're like, we're not even at the halfway point. Like, I don't even know, like, are there stakes here? Because I know we're heading to something that is still like a ways down the road, which is not really the way it was in like phase one or phase two. Like, we weren't being told, we'll just wait for Infinity War. You know, correct. It was like, we got on the other side of Age of Ultron, and then it was just wait for Infinity War.
It's and not it's even that they just announced a lot of content. It's also that they announced way too far in the future. And then that's part of the reason that all these dates seem like controversies. And anytime a director changes with Blade, everyone's mad about it now. And that becomes a joke. Well, part of that's because you announced it so long ago. Like, if you were just doing this all in the shadows, no one would know. So you're not letting anyone down. You know what I mean?
No, totally. And that's like, I think it was even for me, like I would think about the Secret Wars, like both of those movies, but even the stuff that would maybe lead into those movies, it just seemed so far away. And it was so, it's like so hard to even see what the connective tissue would be like character wise. Like, it's like, we've talked about the building multiverse stuff, and like, I'm not saying they haven't planted seeds. But now it's like, you know, on the other side of Deadpool and Wolverine, I think we kind of see how they're consolidating some of this like multiverse time travel stuff. But then also it's like, okay, we see the movies that are coming in the next couple of years, and we have Secret Wars in like less than 3 years, and another movie. When is Doomsday? 26?
Yeah, I think, right? Secret Wars is 27. I think it's 26.
Yeah.
Plus, man, plus so there'll that's be what I'm a saying. Spider-Man 4 in there. There might be a Thor 5 in there, potentially.
Yeah.
Might be a Doctor Strange 3 in there.
Plus, I feel like there's got to be another a Doctor Strange follow-up. But anyway, I'm not trying to get totally off, but I just want to say, talking about like the stuff that's coming up, I'm getting really excited about even the things that were not at the top of my list before, and I'm just loving that it's like I really think that we're in the ramp up stage kind of from here on out.
We're going to close today's episode with a really brief discussion on Agatha All Along. I'm saying this right now before a quick break just to say that we haven't seen it yet. So if you're one of those people that wants to know truly nothing, it's still a safe space. So come back and listen to us close out this episode quickly talking about Agatha All Along after a quick word from these sponsors.
And at the top of today's episode, I was talking about getting caught up on some comics, that had just been piled up for a bit, some that I have been waiting to read for years and have been wanting to read in a specific format because I am just that kind of freak. And I am so excited to talk about this comic that Organic Priced Books was very kind to supply us with. And that is All-Star Superman by Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely. I have been wanting to read this forever, and I thought that this was the time to do it because they recently released this Absolute Edition that I'm showing if you're watching on video, but it's the super oversized, like really high quality pages. And these are kind of the books to get if you're wanting the art showcased. And this is a book that I had heard you wanted that showcased in. I also wanted to read it now because it is supposed to be the inspiration for the James Gunn Superman film that's coming out not that long from now, next year. And so since it's September and I love alliteration, I thought I could do a little bit of a Superman session here. And I've got another comic that I'm going to want to talk about here later this month, if I can find a break between all of the Agatha talk. But in all seriousness, I am not a big Superman guy. And Kyle, you and I have talked about why Superman is a tough character sometimes. This is the comic that I think makes the case for Superman as a great character, not just in comics, but period. Like, there's such interesting stuff done there. It's so like beautiful and moving, and the art is incredible. And it is like, if James Gunn successfully adapts this, it would be a phenomenal Superman film. So this is like one of the best comics I have ever read, I think.
Wow.
And I was like blown away. I'd heard that forever. So my expectations were high and it surpassed them.
Holy cow.
I cannot stop thinking about it. Just a really, really great book. And like I said, Organic Price Books right now has this Absolute Edition. I think they also have some other cheaper versions that are not hardcover if that's your preference. But organicpricebooks.com, code friends from work. I really think you'll be glad that you went for it.
Friends from
that's my comics pitch for the day.
Friends from work is all one word, by the way. Check it out. Okay, Agatha All Along releases on September 18, and it's going to be coming out, Robbie, at 9 p.m. Eastern time, which you and I are a huge fan
Spooky.
Of. It's also going to be overlapping with Halloween, which will be really fun as well.
Yeah.
By the way, this is our favorite release schedule. This is what WandaVision was, nighttime releases, and I just have such fond memories of watching desperately wanting to know what's going to happen and then breaking it down that night. It's just so much fun. I want to say this up front, just so that people are aware of what's going to happen. I'm not sure there's ever been a show that's a larger prime candidate for being review bombed than this one. So you're going to see a lot of hate right away online. I haven't seen it yet, but I just know that's what's going to happen with this show. And it's going to be from a lot of people who are riding like the Deadpool and Wolverine high and are coming into this wanting to dislike it, I think. And so just be aware of that. It's not Deadpool and Wolverine. This is going to be very, very different in tone and everything.
Yeah.
So if that's what you're expecting, you're just going to see all kinds of those headlines on YouTube, on Twitter, et cetera. So just be careful. Guard your heart. That being said, I want you to go into it with a genuine good faith, and then you can dislike it if you want to dislike it. But, you know, I think give it a fair shake. I was doing some reading on it.
I had not even thought about that. That's a good call out, though.
Oh, it's for sure going to happen. You and I aren't getting our screeners until the week of release, which, again, people have a lot of interesting takes on. You know, some people think that's a bad sign.
Yeah.
But that's why we haven't seen the episode itself yet. So
apparently there were four episodes that certain members of the press got at D23, but even that, I think, was they were subjected to like the highest level of Disney confidentiality provision. So it's like some for whatever reason, they seem to be taking the secrecy around this one pretty seriously. And I don't know, like it could be that, you know, whenever you don't see early reviews about things or like screeners going out early, that it's a bad sign. But it seems like they're also just really, really wanting spoilers to not get out for some reason.
I think the one thing that a lot of people are, you know, on the spoiler front wanting to know is how much of a connection is there to Wanda Maximoff? Elizabeth Olsen's been in the media recently talking about that she'd love to come back if they can find the right way to do it. That's got my attention the most, right? Like, that's the thing I'm most intrigued by. I'm excited for like the camp and the fun Halloween nature of it. I'll be interested to see if it's scarier than I'm thinking. Like, are they going to actually go kind of horror, or will it be like, you know, ode to 80s witches type thing, which is a different vibe, you know?
Well, and I mean, some of the, and I can't remember if you and I talked about this at the time, but it looks like they are doing different
kind of eras, like
different styles and eras of horror movies.
That's what I was going to say, because Jack Schaefer, who was one of the writers of WandaVision, is now the showrunner of this show, has multiple times hinted that...
She was the creator of WandaVision, right?
Not writer, creator. That this is like a part two, like a follow-up to WandaVision, with Vision Quest being kind of like the part three of this trilogy, this WandaVision trilogy. Yeah. So I do think there's going to be elements of that sitcom style that carry over. And like you said, maybe it's not sitcoms, but maybe it's all these different shout outs to these different ages of horror or witch movies, and kind of journeying through those. Clearly, from the plot, we know that it covers Agatha trying to regain her powers by doing the witch's road or whatever. And at the end of the road is whatever the witch could dream of, they get. And I am fascinated to see what that is for her. You know, like what was she, like, what does she want the most? And does that then tie in somehow to Wanda? So I am intrigued in that Jack Schaefer sees this as a follow up to WandaVision. And I'm intrigued to what that even looks like with such an isolated show.
Well, and you know what's interesting? We're getting more and more of the Tom King Vision series that the Candace and I covered in the comics corner on Friends from Work Plus way back. Like, that comic has some Agatha stuff in it that's very different from what WandaVision has. But I could see coming about more here, not just plot-wise, but more like tonally. You and I also haven't talked about this, but it's big news that's worth mentioning here. We've also gotten announcements about this Vision series, and it was announced that James Spader is officially returning as Ultron,
which
in
is
that Vision series.
Unbelievable. And one of the best things that could ever happen to you and I personally.
That is something that you and I have been like pleading for years.
That looks like,
but
is
that also makes me think. They could be doing some like really, like, I feel like whenever they're talking about this like WandaVision trilogy, what I love about that is you're obviously a huge fan of that character, and we've talked both characters, and we've talked about how it's like the tragedy of it is that it feels like that relationship and that dynamic was kind of over when we were like wanting even more of it. But that's also what makes it so compelling. But I do think that there's a really complicated history there in the comics with some like really like compelling and at times like uniquely moving moments for superhero comics.
Please.
And so I think that they could be really just giving us a like 3-season deep dive into this very specific part of the lore that I think is so great in the comics. And I think, I don't even think this is controversial, is one of the most successful elements of the MCU to date.
I almost don't want you to tell me what that is as far as Agatha goes, just because we're so close now and I kind of want to see if that's the case. But I am, when you say that, like, my mind goes to, I don't understand fully how Agatha ties into that, but that's what the show's for, you know?
Yeah.
I'm thinking like out loud, like, I don't think you should tell people probably. That's going to be awesome.
Well, and even then, I don't, you know, I think you could go read that comic and it would in no way spoil anything for Agatha all along. But I do think it just gives you a sense of the way that those characters have interacted like at different points in the Marvel Comics history. But I also wanted to talk about the other creators that are involved here. Obviously, Matt Shakman was the director for WandaVision, and we're, I think, all very grateful that he's handling Fantastic Four. Yep. I'm really excited about that.
Praise.
The directors that we have here, we've got a couple people. Schaefer, who is the creator, is actually directing one.
Yeah.
She is directing. Yeah. And then we've got a director from Wednesday that's showing up, a director from, if people watch American Gods, Gen V, Cloak and Dagger. So it's like people that are kind of familiar with this genre. I think that is generally encouraging to me, especially when you're kind of looking at the tone of this thing. But what I really wanted to talk about is the writing side, because that is where you see so much carryover from WandaVision. And that makes me think that they really are trying to create something that feels cohesive. And so you've got, I think we have a full writers lineup, courtesy of Greg. Episode one will be Jack Schaefer. Then we'll have Laura Donney coming back, who wrote episode 8 of WandaVision, which is an all-timer.
Yeah, she wrote the What Is Grief line, right? Which is awesome.
Yes, yeah. We have Cameron Squires coming back for episode 3. He wrote the 7th, 5th, and 6th episodes of WandaVision, and he also wrote 2 episodes of Moon Knight and Werewolf by Night.
Let's go.
Which I kind of think makes sense, especially the Werewolf by Night piece.
Yeah,
it makes sense that he would carry over here.
I just also love Moon Knight so much. Like if I am a little bit lower than the average person on Shang-Chi, I'm definitely higher than the average person on Moon Knight. Keep going.
But
yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, in general, I'm just excited that there is, in fact, all this connective tissue between these projects.
Oh, for sure. Like I said, that's probably the thing that intrigues me the most. I'm curious to get a little bit of a gauge from our listenership right now on this show, as we're just a few days preceding the actual episodes releasing, just because I've been out of pocket a little bit. I haven't heard as much about this show, but are listeners also excited about the WandaVision-ness of it? Because I am. That's the part that gets me the most intrigued. Hit us up anywhere, by the way. At the FFW podcast on social media and the FFWpodcast.com for sure, for all things friends from work. But Robbie, any final words? I'm excited to watch it. You and I are going to get screeners, we hope, when you're hearing this episode, maybe that night. So we'll be watching it and then hopefully having the first 2 episodes of Agatha ready to go right when they release for you, which is going to be fun. We're back in it, baby.
One thing I want to say quickly, I think I may have misspoke earlier. I was saying Cameron Squires, who is a writer on this coming series and I believe was also a WandaVision writer, but Peter Cameron is the one that wrote on a Moon Knight and Werewolf by Night. So another writer that's coming in from WandaVision. It's just confusing because you have a Cameron last name and a Cameron first name.
Sure. I got you.
And lot to juggle, but I don't want anyone to feel as though they're being misled by friends from work.
But to clarify, both of them are writing on
they are Agatha. Both writing.
Okay, yes. Okay, gotcha.
They were both writing Agatha, and I think that they both wrote on WandaVision. So okay. Again,
you just attributed to the wrong stuff, person. But I gotcha. Okay, got it.
Yes. Yeah. But in general, I really have very little like expectations going into this.
Same.
Like there have been, you know, it's like for a while now, I feel like there have been rumors that the people working on this show feel like it's really something special. The stuff that I'm seeing trickle out, like, I don't know if we talked about how they're trying to do so much with practical effects. But like that, like, I love that they're like with the era stuff that we touched on. But also it just seems like they are generally really wanting to, like, that part of WandaVision, like the kind of like TV magic, movie making magic element of trying to do everything. Yeah. And that's what, like, you know, it's like when we talked about like the broken plates and stuff, and the way that they did that on the invisible lines in the original. Like, I think seeing them do things like that here and the behind the scenes things that I've seen, like showcasing just bits of that, that makes me excited because it just shows that there's a level of like craftsmanship and intentionality and creativity going into this. And I think you and I have always been of the mind that, like, we will take you on your own terms, like as a project, like whatever you are presenting as,
right?
Like, that's how we're going to judge it. And so it's like the real question then becomes, like, how well are you doing what it is that you're trying to do and how much are you putting into it? And so I think that it does seem as though a lot of the battle is won once you know that there's this kind of thought being put into it. Ugh. Like, even if it winds up not being your thing, I'm just getting a sense that it's not going to be because they phoned it in.
That's such a good closing word. That's what I wish I could have articulated as well as you, for sure. We are both going to go in knowing this is a unique thing. And then how well are you doing that thing? And that gets me excited.
I'm pumped.
Thank you for listening. It's so good to be back. We'll see you right back here chatting about Agatha All Along, episodes 1 and 2. Right back here on Friends From Work.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.